the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I'm delighted to say Graeme Hunter is here with us this morning. Graeme, good morning to you.
Hey there. Let's
start with the trolling bits and the electoral politics, where apparently becoming like Manchester United is one of the worst things that could possibly happen to a club of Barcelona's stature. Are Barcelona becoming the new Manchester United?
Whoa, that's a very philosophical question for this time in the morning. Who's throwing that mud at them?
One of the presidential candidates, he said we're in danger of becoming the new Milan or the new Manchester United.
Okay, that's a couple of days ago. You're right. It was said. Look, I think what's happening at the moment is that the cultural angst is so great that even before they lost the title, which was last Thursday, there are many around the Camp Nou, and we've spoken about this on your show a couple of times, who are beginning to fear for the future, not just the present. I think the point is, number one, there's been a decline, and when rust sets in, sometimes it isn't as simple as it now retrospectively seems in either 2002 or in 2007-8 when the previous reign was the Gaspar presidential reign was ended by a landslide Joan Laporta victory and things kind of went right within 6 months, or when 2007-8 Rijkaard's last season was ended by the arrival of Pep Guardiola and they won a treble, things like that. And I hope we said that one off the ball. They're, if they're not impossible to repeat, they're so ultra rare that we'll be back to the situation where when rust takes a grip, and it has at the La Masia and at Camp Nou and in the boardroom and in their accountancy practices, then it's not easy to fix. So the hard truth is that right now Barcelona look exhausted. They're not playing particularly good football. The fact that they took the league title race to the penultimate day is down to the hard will and the brutal talent of a group of players like Messi, Alba, Suarez, Pique, for example, Busquets, Ter Stegen. There needs to be a training upgrade. They're not shirking, but they're not at that intensity level every day that makes them elite. They're good enough to cling on to being narrowly knocked out of the cup. They're still in the Champions League with a 1-1 tie score against Napoli at the moment. But anybody with, you don't need binoculars or telescope to look at the middle future and say, well, with Dembele constantly injured and there's a massive debt on that, with Coutinho unlikely to be welcomed back and a massive debt on that, with Griezmann at the moment not having scored enough to never mind just justify the 120-odd million that it cost to buy him. But it's very clear that until late in the season, they hadn't found a way to fit him in with Suarez and Messi. They did find that. It looked spectacular, and Griezmann immediately got a minor injury. So the problems are vast in terms of, they're not vast in terms of what Charlton are suffering right now or Wigan are suffering, but Barcelona expect to be a winning machine. They expect the culture and the La Masia philosophy to blossom and continue, and all of that is under threat. It's a legitimate comment. The Manchester United part, I'm not signing off on.
Fair enough. I mean, as in Manchester United.
As in Milan's a good point. Milan's a better point. Milan was a behemoth that you thought could never be tipped. And they've gone through something that Manchester United definitely haven't suffered. During the time when we've been legitimately criticising Manchester United for their choice of, well, who runs them, how they spend the money, their transfer policy, their coaches and how they're dealt with, what kind of football they put on, they've still consistently won trophies or been close to winning trophies. They now, you know, legitimately, despite the FA Cup result, they now can point to several, and I mean several, key footballers who have either been developed at Old Trafford and Carrington or who have come through the ranks there. So I would say if you leave Barcelona out of it and you were to compare AC Milan and Manchester United, then it's an unfair comparison. It's not the right model to use at all.
Fair enough.
It's also true that Barcelona aren't coming off a 26-year reign, as, for example, Milan did with, say, Berlusconi, for example. So the Milan one is a clearer comparison. It makes sense because you must remember the time when both in European and domestic terms, it looked like AC Milan could never be robbed of a a feeling of dominance for more than about 8 or 9 months. And now they've been pitiful for a long time. And that's what I think. I guess it was Victor Font, the presidential candidate for next summer, who made that remark. And I think there was legitimacy in it.
Is there anybody around Barcelona who is thinking that the new era will be a Messi-less era and it would be better for the club to be the ones who are agitating on that front rather than Messi, you know, as in reject him before he rejects us and try and manage that and try and cash in some way? I don't even know if they could cash in, or if the contract is such a way that maybe this summer you let it toll and then all of a sudden you go, okay, right, look, we had this offer here. What do you think? Why don't we all just do this now? Is there anybody in the club who thinks that the right thing to do is to strike first when it comes to that?
There was, Chair. There was. And one of them ended up in preventative prison for a year and a bit, Sandro Rosset. The other one is Bartomeu, who's a hugely unpopular president now. He was vice president before. When those two were a duo of whom I despair in just about everything that I believe in as somebody who chronicles football in Spain, I really found huge amounts to oppose about Rosset and Bartomeu as president and vice president. They began to tout that idea several years ago when they were taking a poll on various issues across the club of what are called the socios, the members. And remember, whenever Barcelona are going really well or Real Madrid are going really well, people in the UK and Ireland often asked about membership, clubs being owned by members. And the system is always eulogized. At times like this, there's less attention on the fact that often members can be lulled into a false sense of security. They can, just like all voters, they can make bad decisions. And even though it's a membership club at Real Madrid, Florentino Perez's power has been almost unbroken for 20 years. I say almost because he walked away, came back, won elections again. And therefore, the lateral thinking that you've posed there, Ger, was something that Rosset and Bartomeu started to wonder about 4 or 5 years ago. And in a long, long questionnaire, they slipped up, would you think it was disastrous if the club sold Messi, in at sort of question number 36 of 50. And there was uproar about it, because at that stage, they were beginning to resent the fact that Messi and his people were in such a powerful negotiating position. Every time that they came to renew the contract, they felt, and I think you were hinting at this, they felt a little bit locked in, a bit Harry Houdini'd about how do we get rid of this straitjacket of needing Messi on the pitch, recognising that he's our best player now and probably of all time, but can we afford to keep paying him that much money? Do we want to show who's boss? And they flirted with that, and they were slapped down by the media, by the membership. There was a little bit of bad feeling between Messi and one of the vice presidents who was in charge of economics. He said, do we really have to keep renewing this guy's contract every... Well, yes, if you want to keep the best player in the world. He just, even in a poor season for Barcelona, and an indifferent season for Messi, in my view, he's won the Pichichi, he's the top scorer. His assists and goals across the season in all competitions would be up around the 60 mark. That's a hell of a lot of goals. He's definitely been Barcelona's best player. He's kept them in things. When he clicks, they all click. The Villarreal victory was like rolling back the years by about 5 or 6. When they beat Villarreal at the Madrigal 4-1. And Messi's still the heart of everything. Having just turned 33, the question is, he may wish to leave. There are multifold opinions about whether it's a bluff, whether he is really weighing up his opportunities of going somewhere else. Would he go to Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain? Would he go back to Newell's Old Boys? Not only, I think, does nobody know, I don't think a decision's been taken. Messi is assessing what's going on, assessing whether there'll be good business done in the summer, and whether Kiki Setién will stay on. Kiki Setién has proved, I would go so far as to say, inept in how to manage a squad like this. His football principles are really good. When his Las Palmas or Real Betis teams were playing well, they were a joy to watch. Managing footballers like that, who kind of where the power seat is changed between the coach has it and the players don't. And here it's like, you know, you're not even allowed to sit down in the presence of this squad, never mind who's in the power seat. He hasn't been he's just not good enough. So how do you find a coach to take over for what looks like being a year? Because in a year there are guaranteed elections. It's not guaranteed, but it looks extremely likely that this candidate, Victor Font, will win. He wants Xavi to come in. Xavi recently renewed his deal with Al Sadd in Qatar for a couple of years, but with a break clause in a year's time if Barcelona come in for him. So he's obviously thinking, yeah, in a year's time, I might be ready. I might choose to go. Whether he, as you pointed out with your lateral thinking, wants to inherit a 34-year-old Messi is another question altogether, and far too complicated for this time in the morning, particularly here. So, Jared, if that's your follow-up...
Fair enough. We can come back to that next year.
On Messi's comments, Graham, he described the team as weak, inconsistent, and lacking in desire. And it's interesting how we immediately go to Setien and Modest Setien thinking, and will he leave the club this summer? What are his teammates thinking after hearing that?
They know the truth, Owen. They know the truth. They know that he's talking about the performance. There are one or two players that I don't think he gives a fig for, really. He knows absolutely clearly that there aren't enough high-quality players or high-quality athletes around him. He has taken time to warm to Griezmann, but that process has definitely begun to gel, thanks to Luis Suarez. He pointed his finger really strongly at the management of the team and the management of the club. He said there needs to be global self-criticism, global meaning a word that suggests everybody at the club needs to look at their performance. And if you're asking, can Messi drive players against him? Is there a schism in the squad? Is there a lack of unity because he's been critical? No, all of them know that he is in charge. With due deference to my neighbours, he's top dog. He's not a yapper. his bite, I think, is something they're all deadly afraid of. They all know that he's their best footballer, remains their best footballer, and probably could remain Barcelona's best footballer for another 2 or 3 years at least. Athletically, he's still in great nick, and he deserves to have a team built around him. And what's happened is that, you know, there was a pretty strange circumstances on, but like in the last game, they went up to the Basque country to play Alaves with five subs, two of whom were goalkeepers. And after that, those critical words, I've been maladroit. The best way to answer you is to say he stood on the pitch after losing at home to Osasuna, who for sort of 11 minutes of normal time and 4 or 5 minutes of added time had 10 men. They lost home to Osasuna. He said those things. They were coruscating, you're right. Look what happened at the weekend. They went out there against an Alaves side who should have been able to give them difficulties, to hurt them. It should have been a Barcelona side lacking in motivation. And they literally had about, in senior terms, they probably had about 13 or 14 fit players. And they won 5-0. And they won 5-0 at a canter. It could have been 7 or 8. And they played again. They rolled back the years. Messi's point is, where are these performances when they really count? And he's right. And you can unpick it. You can answer it in that the squad building, the squad refreshing has been inept.
It's the 8th of August, I think, is the second leg of the game against Napoli.
That's right.
What kind of schedule do they have between now to make sure that there's match fitness and that actually they can have a squad that's capable of playing? Will they have more than five on their bench that night, for example?
Well, first of all, they're going to have a change of personnel, and Arto will be at Juventus by then. Pjanic won't be registered. Brathwaite isn't registered to play in that competition. Ousmane Dembele should be fit. Griezmann will be fit. There were suspensions up at Alaves, so automatically, so long as there are no training incidents, Piqué comes back, Alba comes back. It's odd to say it, given that they looked as if they needed a burst of athleticism in the last few weeks of the season. First thing they need is a holiday and a rest. To play 11 games in the way that they have in just over a month is ultra demanding, and they will be given a break, and it's the right thing to do. It'll be very, very brief. Then it'll be about conditioning, and then it'll be about whether they can introduce intensity into training. But the absolute key about whether they can beat Napoli or not, and those who watched the first leg will understand that Barcelona were a little lucky to come away with a 1-1 draw. And Rino Gattuso's side is full of exactly what Barcelona hate. It's what was Superman afraid of? Kryptonite. There are six or seven kryptonite players in that Napoli side who run hard at you, who put the ball beyond you, make you turn, make you chase, who aerially are dominant over Football Club Barcelona. It should not be taken as a given that Barcelona, with no crowd at Camp Nou, go through. They can go through, man for man, in terms of skill, they're the better side. So, and the answer to your question is yes, there'll be a distinctly different level of personnel available to, potentially available to City. And the likelihood is that he stays because the turnaround time is so short. Personally, I think that's an error. I think that the breach between him and the squad is so, well, between him and six or seven of the hardliners in the squad is so significant that probably promoting the B-team coach, Garcia Pimiento, is the right thing to do temporarily. So when you tune in to watch Barcelona-Napoli on the 8th, which comes the night after the return leg between Real Madrid and Manchester City, right now, City are 2-1 up on Madrid and won that first leg pretty handsomely. And if you look at the way Madrid have been performing, what City have been doing in terms of slightly Jekyll and Hyde, right now, you could argue that the slightly better chances that Madrid pull off the win and go through, whereas Barcelona might trip up to Napoli. No guarantees, and Barcelona are capable on their day of putting two or three past Napoli. It's no longer easy to say, oh, yeah, this is their day. Not easy at all.
Let's talk about Madrid then, because it's been a remarkable return to, I don't know what the word is here, I'm going to use the word normalcy, Graham, because it seems surprising almost at the spine of this team, the old guard of Real Madrid have been the ones who have stepped up under Zidane for especially the second half of this season. There are so many questions to ask here. The one I wanted, though, is about Gareth Bale. How long is he going to stay at the club? He's obviously been in weird form, to say the least, and I mean in terms of his mood over the last little while as Real Madrid have kind of trotted to the La Liga title. Where does he end up at the end of all of this? Because Zidane has been a pretty good man manager down through the years.
In my mind, I was ready to say to you, I don't care. The management of an asset of Bale's worth by Real Madrid hasn't looked particularly good, but he fits into a category, and it's a horrible trait that football's shown over all of our careers. When they don't want a player, when they want him to leave, very often footballers can tell you, and maybe on off the ball you've had those stories. And maybe it's the same in some parts of GAA, I don't know. But in soccer, we all know that if you refuse to leave, once the Bosman rule stopped clubs treating you in exactly the way they wanted at the end of your contract, the gloves came off and clubs became something very close to bullies to players that they wanted to show the door to. Bale's been in that situation for some seasons, and the balance of power has tilted. There were seasons when Madrid said, go and talk to Manchester United, and he did. He spoke to Mourinho about going to Manchester United in those days. And that was the season when Mourinho in the summer tour greeted him with, I can't sign you because you don't come out and speak up about wanting to leave Madrid. And he opted to stay because, with the exception of his individual relationship with Zidane, which is no worse than cold, cool, and with the exception of him not playing, life for Gareth Bale in Madrid is pretty good. There's another trophy, there are bonuses, there's golf, the weather's fantastic. He's still got some respect from, you know, a good handful of his teammates. At 31, he's still a very good athlete. And my answer to your question is that there is a bit of a Gordian knot in that Madrid have long wanted to get him out, to cut his wages, to reuse the money that they could get for him, not what they spent on him, in order to clear some of their debt or to spend it on other players. But the places that Gareth Bale is willing to go to, his agent asked to be allowed to go free to China. This is where I begin to lose support for a very good footballer who initially was underrated in what he was achieving in Spain and deserved far more credit, but who, between him and his agent, the way in which they've confronted a problem, which is quite typical in football, has been kind of like a little bit recalcitrant teenagers. Well, Mom, Dad, I'm going to sit you out here. I'm sitting in the corner. I'm going to sulk. I don't like that. I don't respect that. And I'm far more pointing the finger at Jonathan Barnett than at Gareth Bale. This problem could and should have been resolved with each side giving a little bit, ceding a little bit is what I mean. And then the world would, because, you know, we're talking about Bale on this show, not because we're Welsh, not because we desire the national team to do well, not because we're Madridistas, but because Gareth Bale remains an intriguing, exciting, international class footballer. And right now we're seeing, you know, some of his golden years dribbling away. And none of us as neutrals who are desperate to see the elite footballers do special things, none of us want to see that. And it bugs me that Madrid are being singled out here alone as the odd ones in this partnership, because that's not true.
Yeah, no, it's true. The career will be over in the blink of an eye, and we'll all be looking back on, geez, he was amazing. Look at what he did. Look at that highlights reel. Real pity he never put together a full couple of seasons that we could all watch and enjoy. Graham, great stuff. Thanks very much.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.